From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The city of Philadelphia has become a major national flashpoint in the grassroots campaign to abolish the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency, or ICE. An encampment in front of an ICE detention center set up more than a week ago was raided by police twice. Several people have been violently arrested. Protesters were undeterred and then moved their action to the front of the Philadelphia City Hall. In addition to calling for an end to ICE, people are demanding that Philadelphia Mayor Jim Kenney end the Preliminary Arraignment Reporting System, or PARS. They're also calling for shutting down of the Berks County Detention Center. Among those on the front lines of the Philadelphia occupation is our correspondent Chenjerai Kumanyika. He's an assistant professor in the Rutgers University Department of Journalism and Media Studies. Welcome to the program, Chenjerai.
Hi, Sonali. How are you doing?
Doing well. Thanks for joining us. Now, we had spoken some time ago to our other news correspondent, Arun Gupta, who was reporting from the Occupy ICE encampment in Portland, Oregon. And yes. I think Portland has the distinction of being the first such action. Would you say Philadelphia was sort of inspired by what happened there?
Yes, I think so. I think that when this action was started last Monday, it was definitely an effort to operate in solidarity with other occupations that are going on.
So tell us a little bit about the story of how everything unfolded. When and where did the encampment begin? And then how did police respond?
Well, a coalition of organizations called for a rally at City Hall on, this was at 4:30 p.m. on last Monday, July 2nd. And so people gathered at the City Hall, and, you know, I would say it was several hundred people gathered. And then at a certain point, the rally turned from a rally into a march, and protesters began to march down Market Street from City Hall towards the ICE Detention Center. And as the march moved through the streets, it just gathered a lot more people. So I felt like at one, you know, I was at this march, and I feel like at one point there may have been as many as, you know, 400 or 500 people in the streets. So they had no problem. They were kind of really dominating the streets at that point. And then this march moved from City Hall to 8th and Cherry Street, the corner of 8th and Cherry, which is where the ICE Detention Center is. And from that point, as the march moved in front of that, I noticed that there were already organizations there who had a couple of tarps set up, clearly with a plan to occupy, particularly to block the garages so that vans could not be brought in with detainees. But they also, because there were so many people, also wound up blocking, kind of just taking the whole corner, which included the front door to ICE.
So this wasn't just an ICE office, it's an actual detention center holding undocumented immigrants.
It's an ICE office, but I think it also, you know, I forget exactly which day it was last week, but I didn't see this with my own eyes, but people claimed that they saw someone be brought in. There's three large garages in the bottom. So I think that, that people feel like there are people in there. And certainly towards the end of the week, middle of the week, we started to see people come there with appointments of various kinds.
So then what happened? So you were set up in front of this ICE prison / office starting from last week. And how long did it take police to respond? We should remember that in Portland, police held back for many, many days. And it was actually federal officers that ended up pushing people out of that encampment. But it looks like in the case of Philadelphia, the local police department didn't seem to hold back.
No, they didn't. And, you know, we'll talk more about this, but this is interesting given that Philadelphia is supposed to be a sanctuary city with a mayor who's claimed that he really is not wanting to cooperate with ICE. But what happened was Monday evening, you know, the protesters, we kind of held those three garages. And then towards the evening, more police started to assemble. And at a certain point, it looked like they were about to try to take back control of these garages. And, you know, we all locked arms and made a decision that this was going to be where we were going to stand.
And as far as you know, was this federal property, public property?
I think I think that the building is federal property. Hmm. I think that, you know, depending on where you stand. So at the point where we were standing Monday night, we were standing a little couple of feet out. So I think that it was it could be that if you're like a certain amount of feet out from the building, then you cannot be detained on federal charges. But it's interesting. So from the beginning, what you saw is a couple of Homeland Security officers, not more than five or six, but they've really been leading with the Philadelphia police. So there was kind of a standoff Monday night. And in the end, once enough people locked arms, the police kind of backed down. And then the encampment expanded. And overnight, people spent the night. I spent the night there. My wife spent the night there. And in the morning at 11 a.m. is when the first set of arrests happened.
And this is last Tuesday then that the police came down. Describe what happened, because it seemed quite violent. I believe there were, what, a couple dozen people arrested?
Yes. What happened was, you know, the encampment had expanded out, you know, with tents and various tables and things in front of three garages, and then protesters kind of standing behind those. And at a certain point, several police, I don't know exactly how many, but upwards of 20 or 30 began to use their bike. And this is an interesting technique that I haven't seen before, but they're using the bikes really as a weaponized bikes kind of situation. So
the police used their bikes as weapons.
Well, they use their bikes to kind of like take space. So they line the bikes up and they sort of would like push the bikes forward in the line as a way to almost bulldoze the protesters. So we sort of locked arms and, you know, said, we're not going to move. They're going to have to arrest us. And at that point, the police did become violent. They started to they knocked a couple of people down next to me. And they just pushed them with the bikes. They pushed me back. A police officer pushed me with the bikes back and forth. You know, he didn't knock me down, but he was definitely pushing me with his bike. And then when he saw that I wasn't sort of going down easy, then another officer just said, grab that guy. I was arrested, but I saw some people next to me being pushed to the ground. I felt like they were, you know, you just saw police descend on them. And one of the a lot of people's glasses were smashed. And one person who was arrested with me sustained injuries, and you could see he was bleeding from the head. So
I understand there's one of the activists have decided to sue the city for excessive force by the police.
Yes, this is Anlin Wang, and I believe that he's suing for the second set of arrests, which happened on Thursday, July 5th.
Ah, so there were the first set of arrests on Tuesday and then a second set on Thursday. Was the second set as violent as the first?
The second set appeared even more violent than the first. So if you look and really see when they really totally took down the encampment, because after the first arrest on Tuesday, I was detained. And I imagined that, you know, because we had 29 of us were detained, that was going to be the end of that encampment. But I was surprised to come back in the afternoon and find that, more people had set up shop. And so they had sort of lost control of one of the garages. But the encampment was very much up and running as of Tuesday evening. And in fact, it expanded. And so on Wednesday, which the 4th, I believe, was July, was Wednesday. And it was like, I mean, by this time, because of the arrests and it was the holiday, it was packed down in front of the ICE detention center. There were all kinds of teach-ins happening and people coming to support, and it was really it really expanded. And then on Thursday, the police took down the encampment. Actually, it was an afternoon. It was Thursday afternoon, July the 5th, around 1, I believe it was. The police came, and, you know, by this time there was many tents up. You know, we had an aid table and all these kinds of things that you have in an encampment. And the police, you could see the footage of them just ripping through the encampment and grabbing people, knocking people down. In one instance, a protester is dragged across the ground, which is like the hot ground, and scraped. So, and this is, I think, the context in which Anlin is saying that he was assaulted.
So then how did the encampment get moved to the front of City Hall?
Well, after that, you know, that police raid completely violently destroyed the encampment, and, you know, people were hurt, and there were only seven people arrested, but they just went through everything, ripped down tents and, you know, just destroyed food and threw it all away. So that was pretty much appeared to be but the end of the encampment, although we had a press conference that afternoon and we had a lot of support. If you see the press conference, you'll see there was a tremendous amount of people came out to support, and multiple organizations, including New Sanctuary Movement, you know, a group called Power, which is a faith group, and just many, many groups. My group, 215 People's Alliance, who was not part of the initial coalition, but, you know, I spoke on behalf of them. So that evening, a group I think there was a general assembly out in the public right in front of ICE. And ultimately, a decision was made to set up the encampment at City Hall on Friday evening. And so they moved there Thursday evening, and then, you know, spent the night Thursday. And that's when the current encampment started.
So right now, there are still people camped out in front of City Hall?
Yes, there's absolutely, you know, I went home for a day. I arrived back to the encampment on Friday morning. And yes, it was a full encampment, which is even more secure. By this time, Mayor Kenney had received a lot of criticism because Mayor Kenney was really put into office by many progressives. And they were upset to see this footage. How can you be a sanctuary city and say that you support immigrants? And yet, you know, the police are attacking these peaceful protesters in this way. And at the same time, you know, we should probably talk about the demands.
Let's talk about the demands. The end PARs is one of the demands, I understand.
That's correct. This is something called the Preliminary Arraignment Reporting System. This is a database that the city of Philadelphia shares with ICE, and the contract is due to be up in August. And so this is in the mayor's control. And, you know, a lot of people have called Larry Krasner recently, the new DA recently called for this to be ended, because what he said is that by the city cooperating with ICE, even his job as the district attorney is made harder, because what you have is, as long as the city's cooperating with ICE, people who are the victims of crimes won't report those crimes. They won't come forward. And so it's harder for him to even do his job. So you're creating a class of victims. So that's the one big demand that really, I think, especially since City Hall occupation started, has taken, you know, precedent. And I just want to say, this is work before this whole rally started on July 2nd. These organizations that called it consulted with Vamos Juntos and with New Sanctuary Movement. These are groups who have been working on rights for immigrants and undocumented people for many, many years. They've been doing this work. And so these occupations are a new tactic, but their work is not at all new.
And so they were consulting with people who are intimately involved in this for a long time to make sure that demands are consistent, that people aren't talking over one another, but working together. So besides the end PARs, I'm assuming abolish ICE is the second demand?
Right, yeah. I mean, the order of the demands has been, you know, people putting abolish ICE first, but of course, this is a long-term demand.
And a national demand, yeah.
And a national demand, yes. And then ending PARs. And then the other one is shutting down Berks. So we have in Philadelphia, we have a Berks Family Detention Center, which was opened, I believe, in 2000. Not exactly. It was opened in 2001, actually, and is the nation's first family-based detention center.
Right, because it was under George W. Bush that family detention began to be a thing.
That's right. And amidst anti-Muslim, as you know, Islamophobia and all that kind of hysteria after September 11th. And, you know, but since this facility has opened, there's been numerous complaints. In 2016, 22 mothers in the facility went on a hunger strike protesting the conditions. And the facility was found by, I think it was basically found that the Pennsylvania Department of Human Services found that the department is operating illegally. One facet of this is that there is a federal statute called the Flores Statute, which states that children cannot be detained for more than 20 days in a secured facility, meaning that if they're not allowed to leave, they can't be detained for more than 20 days. Well, you know, Berks has kept them for much longer than 20 days, and they claim that they're somehow non-secure, but children can't leave.
And these violations were taking place under both George W. Bush, I understand, but also under Obama. The Flores settlement happened in 1997. And so all presidents, Bush, Obama, and now Trump, have been attempting to violate this agreement.
Absolutely. That's right. They're trying to intensify it. And in fact, one of the reasons why it's really important for us to shut down BRICS, which is also, I think, a practical, attainable, and reasonable goal, is because otherwise, you know, there's three other family detention centers. I believe the other two are in Texas. And you know, they're looking at these as a model. But what we see is that if this is the model, it doesn't work. It's so many complaints about it, you know, calls from all over the state and beyond to close this facility, which is really operating illegally.
Chintroy, what do you make of the Intercept's report on Tuesday that showed a statement signed by dozens of state lawmakers, so representatives and state-level senators in 20 states that have now officially joined the call to abolish ICE? When that call was first made a couple of months ago, it seemed like, or it was dismissed by many in the media as this radical call by the fringe left, and now it has gained serious traction.
It really has, and I think it shows you that, you know, we have to keep these kinds of direct action protests going, we have to continue this mobilization, and that we have to ultimately call for what's right, even when Democrats or whoever want to tell us that these things are not politically, they don't make sense, because now you are seeing the mainstreaming of this demand. Now, on the other side, we don't see from this Republican-run administration much of a sign that they're going to move in this direction. And there are also some voters who are, you know, who have been, I think, persuaded and really tricked into somehow thinking that ICE makes them more secure. But I think that ultimately what we are seeing is that as we raise awareness about ICE, more and more people are deciding that they don't want to be involved with this organization, and the pressure is on. And I know you've also got an occupation that's been happening out in Los Angeles for quite a while as well.
Right. Yeah, our correspondent Nick Cha Kim reported from there last week. And by the way, just on the abolish ICE issue, Democrats are apparently preparing legislation. A bill that they will name the Abolish ICE Act is being ready, and the Washington Post obtained a copy of it on Tuesday, a copy of the text of the bill introduced by, or that's being written by, Representative Mark Pocan. So let's talk about back to Philadelphia and the occupation. I suppose it depends on the Philadelphia Police Department whether they're going to repeat their violent arrest tactics. But if they leave the encampment alone, how long do you think this will continue? I'm assuming you're waiting for Mayor Jim Kenney to respond, right?
Yeah, so Mayor Kenney met with Vamos Juntos and New Sanctuary Movement on Monday, actually. And because he's been really feeling the heat about this from progressives who don't like the way the camps are treated, don't like the issue of him cooperating. But it's unclear where he is. He gives lip service to being really disturbed by this. And the report was that he seemed disturbed. He heard from community members about how this is affecting them. But he hasn't been able to commit to ending PARs yet. And it may be quite a while before he does that. Meanwhile, the protesters in the encampment don't seem like they're going to stop anytime soon in the foreseeable future. What we've seen is actually them strengthening and fortifying their ability, you know, in terms of supplies. One thing I will say is that Mayor Kenney did, in the aftermath of the police raid, say that the protesters can stay in front of City Hall, and he's not going to send the police for them. But, you know, one wonders how long that will last. But for now, there has not been much police presence there at all. And so that's enabled the protesters to create general assembly meetings, figure out how they want to govern that space, how they're going to work with some of the unhoused folks who are there, and all those kinds of things.
Chindrai, how has the news of around the family separation been discussed at the encampment? On Tuesday, it was the deadline for the government to reunite all children under the age of five with their parents. The government only managed to reunite about 50 or so, 54, I believe. So they've missed their deadline. There are now calls to penalize the government over breaking this court order. People are drawing comparisons with the daring rescue efforts to reunite the Thai children who were trapped in caves with their parents, you know, across the planet. But here in this country, their government is having a hard time reuniting children that are not trapped in caves. And they are having to resort to DNA testing to determine who the parents are because they were so disorganized when they first ripped the children away from their parents. There's another deadline coming up July 26th for the estimated 2,000 children. Overall, I think those are the older children to be reunited with their parents, and the government will likely miss that deadline as well. How are the stories of what immigrants have gone through being discussed at the encampment?
Yes, I think that there is some discussion of that. I mean, I think that in the past week, a lot of the energy has been really around, trying to, in solidarity with Juntos and other organizations working with undocumented and immigrant people, to really lift up the PARS demand, which feels really achievable. But there is this tremendous sense of momentum as multiple occupations spread out across the country. And as we get more and more information showing how illegitimate and repressive and disorganized and really malicious this whole agency is, and the policies around it, and really the whole Trump's administration's effort to criminalize, undocumented people and people who are basically he doesn't perceive as being white or American enough.
What's next, and where do you think this, do you think that more occupations will continue to happen in cities around the country? There was some worry that the government's decision to try to reunite family members with children would undermine these occupation efforts, would take the wind out of the sails of the Abolish ICE movement, but that doesn't seem to have happened in Philadelphia. And I'm wondering if you can give us a picture finally of what you see happening nationally in terms of grassroots efforts similar to the Philadelphia, to the Portland, to the LA actions.
Right. Well, one good thing is, I think, from what I can see about these occupations, these are organized by organizations who have, real radical left politics. The Abolish ICE is very much also combined with the demand of abolishing police. And while that's another demand that seems wild, but I think, the general analysis at this encampment seems to be that, we don't have a broken policing system. What we have is a system that is working, and we probably need to break it or radically transform it. And that's crucial, actually, to ICE, the relationship. There's one chant that the protesters have said that goes, POLICE, police and ICE are family. Hmm. So I think the other thing is there was a big mass meeting that happened in Philadelphia related to this encampment yesterday. And I know there was various kinds of strategizing going on there. So what I think you're going to see is, I think you probably will see some more encampments, but also there's a real sense that these encampments are just part of a movement which will start to have other tactics. So I think that there's going to be, particularly if Mayor Kenney does not end PARS, I know that there's plans to escalate the pressure on him in a variety of ways, which he'll have to stay tuned to see. And so I think that we're going to start to see other kinds of actions as well, because now people understand, there's momentum. People feel like this is the place that we have to draw the line. And, there's just, the demand and what the fact that this has to happen is so clear.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Chandra, for joining us. We'll keep our eye on the story as it progresses and see where the encampment heads. Is there a hashtag people can look up on Twitter to search for the Occupy ICE in Philadelphia?
Yes, I believe it's it's on every platform at this point. It's on Instagram, Occupy ICE, PHL, Occupy City Hall, PHL. You can go to those places and you'll see, those hashtags and those accounts. Mm-hmm. You'll see, I think tonight what I've heard is that there's what's going out is that there's going to be a queer dance party to just kind of keep people's morale up.
Sounds
and to strengthen
like fun.
The occupation. So that'll be happening awesome. Tonight at the encampment. If you're around, come on down.
Sounds great. Well, Chandrai, thank you so much for joining us and for all the work you do. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Chandra Komanyika is an assistant professor in the Rutgers University Department of Journalism and Media Studies. He's also a news correspondent for Rising Up with Sonali. We've been discussing the Occupy ICE encampment in Philadelphia. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.